tied together. Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We continue with Kevin Randall, Jim Moseley, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast. The book is Reflections of a UFO Investigator. We spent a lot of time on Roswell, but maybe at this point it's enough with Roswell. Kevin, don't you think at this point that we should withhold much further discussion until you guys actually put all the evidence together and make some kind of final conclusion? Is this going to happen in months or years or what?
Well, we're hoping to do it in months. So we'll have to see what happens here. But I'm willing to put the Roswell discussion on hold and move off into other arenas that were discussed in Reflections of a UFO Investigator. That's fine with me.
To me, the most interesting one was the story of Alexander Hamilton, which was funny that it would be a famous name, but a different person. And his story, I believe, having seen a saucer kidnap a cow, etc. Well, that's from Frank Edwards' book. And what's interesting to me is when I started lecturing on saucers in 1967, that book was just out, and I think it was a bestseller. And I was not a real investigator. I didn't claim to be, but they were this lecture bureau was looking for someone that had the time and energy to lecture to colleges, and I wanted to have something to say, frankly. So I read Frank Edwards' book, and I made notes and sort of almost memorized it. And one of the cases that I used in my standard lecture was that one. And then we found out later, if I'm not wrong, it might have been Jerry Clark that solved this. This man and his friends were all members of the Liars Club, and it was just a joke, and it never happened, and I guess nobody ever seriously thought at that time that it did. I think that's a very interesting story, among others that you have.
Well, let me point out that Alexander Hamilton IV was killed in the Battle of Washita with the 7th Cavalry. That's a different Alexander Hamilton, obviously. So, I mean,
right.
His names crop up throughout history.
Oh, yeah, all
my
right.
Point. But, Jerry Clark found, I guess, in the 1970s, found the daughter of Alexander Hamilton. And she described how her father had come home and said his name was going to be in the newspaper, and they had invented this tale of this calf napping, which, by the way, sort of mirrors the modern cattle mutilation phenomenon that's going on, which is also kind of interesting.
Well, it's a combination of the cattle mutilations and abductions all
yes,
within the
yes,
one.
Yes. But what was interesting is Eddie Bullard, who's a folklorist, began looking into the newspapers of the era and found in Yates County newspaper for 1897, found a follow-up story where Hamilton admitted that it was a hoax. And what I found in researching the 1897 stories, one of the things I'd done is whenever I was in a city and had the opportunity, I'd go to the newspaper and look at the morgues for the 1897 newspapers and pull out these airship stories. And I'd done that here in Cedar Rapids, and I got excited because I found one where a big long story in the Cedar Rapids Gazette about the airship. I found the story in the Cedar Rapids Gazette, which is very exciting. A number of people were mentioned in it. They'd seen the object over Cedar Rapids. And I went home, and I was very excited about it. I said, you know, I should have looked at the paper the next day to see what it said. So I went back to the library the next day, and I looked at the newspaper and found another story from Waterloo, Iowa. But not only did the people see it, but the thing had landed, crash-landed in Waterloo, Iowa. And the thing I remember is the Gazette had sent a telegram to the Waterloo newspaper and said, you know, send us 500 words of hard news, no crap. And they talked to the crew of the ship that they had found there, a guy with a German accent, and their project leader had fallen overboard and drowned in the Cedar River. And then eventually somebody recognized the guys, the flight crew, as members or locals, and they admitted that it was a hoax, and that was the end of it. But what happened was it also proved that the Cedar Rapids story was a hoax. And so, that was how we we learn these things. And what was interesting was with Eddie Bullard, he went and looked other newspapers in the area to see if he could find anything else about the Alexander Hamilton calf napping, and found, you know, the follow-up story, found that it was a hoax. And that's the thing about a lot of the airship stories, is you've got one story and you're thinking, this is really kind of an incredible story, but there's never any follow-up on it, and that suggests that the thing is a hoax. You know, the Aurora, Texas crash from 1897, you've got the original story and the thing hit the windmill and blew up, and they found the body of the Martian, and they buried it, and that's the end of the story. There's never any follow-up on it. And people are still going to the Aurora, Texas cemetery looking for the grave of the Martian and things like that. But what they don't do is go to the local historical society, and in this case it's Wise County, Texas, and ask them about it. And I did that before everybody started looking at the Aurora, Texas case, because at the time I lived in Texas. And the historian told me, well, there's just nothing about that in the historical record at all. The event didn't take place. And you look at a couple of books that were written about Wise County in the years, one of them was like 8 years after this event. And here's an account of all the important events in Wise County. And there's nothing about that in the book in 1908, I think it was. Maybe 1908, I think it was. So it was 11 years later. And you're thinking, well, the CIA didn't exist, so they couldn't go there and influence that, and nobody really cared. So if the event had taken place, it should have been mentioned in this book, but it wasn't. And there was a fellow I talked to, and he had these hands that were all misshapen because of arthritis. And he had been alive in 1897. He said, no, it didn't happen. I lived here. It just didn't happen. And about 5 years later, I saw him on a TV program, and he recognized the gnarled hands, and he was now talking about the event as it took place, that the airship crashed and that sort of thing. So,
wait a minute. He told you that it didn't happen, and then he went on TV and said that it did happen.
And 5 or 6 years later, yes, he was on TV saying it did happen. Yes, exactly, exactly right.
Well, but that makes me think, and I may not have this perfectly, but Walter Hart, who I can say I saw but never really met, I was up in the office there at the Roswell Museum one time, and he came in to sign some papers. But as I understand it, it wasn't just a deathbed confession. He, in his later years, added to a story bits and pieces of his involvement with Roswell, whereas in all the years before that, he had never made such claims. Is that about right?
Yes. And in fact, I remember we were going out to dinner in the mid-1990s, early 1990s. We were going out to dinner, and we were kind of throwing things around. And so I just said that I said to him, you know, figuring, well, we've got him in a frame of mind to answer questions, and he's maybe not thinking too carefully about what he's saying. I said, so when did you see the bodies? And he said, I never saw them. And so there was a history of Walter Hart saying that his involvement was only writing the press release. That's all he did. On the other side of the coin, I talked to a guy named Harris, who was clearly in Roswell in 1947. It's pictures in the yearbook. And he told me that Walter Hart had asked him if he wanted to see the bodies. So, and that was before, this was long before this story came out. In fact, Harris died, I think in 1998. May have been a little earlier than that, but he died before Walter Hart ever began to talk about having seen the bodies, and yet he said to me, you know, Walter had asked him if he wanted to see the bodies. So there is a divergent of what Hart was saying. So you could say, well, he lived up to his oath not to talk about it in his lifetime, and then produced this affidavit for release after he passed away. But you know,
didn't he say most of what was in that final statement? Didn't he make the same statements quite a month or more before he died, as I understand it?
He did talk, you might say, out of school, starting in around, I think around 2000. He had been doing an interview with Wendy Connor and her cohort. I think maybe it was Dennis Balthaser. And they had interviewed him, and he'd given part of this story to them.
I'll tell you what, here's another story for you. Coming up, we're talking to Kevin Randall and Jim Mosley. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
Has the United States been discovered in the Bible?
Where does Islam fit in Bible prophecy?
Is the new world order world government?
These and other crucial end time questions are answered in the new DVD package, Understanding the End Time, from End Time Ministries. Jesus Christ said, I tell you these things before they come to pass, so that when they do come to pass, you might believe. After you watch this 14-lesson DVD series, Understanding the End Time, you'll know more about Bible prophecy than the average seminary graduate. This DVD package normally sells for $280, but now is only $199. Order Understanding the End Time DVD package at endtime.com today for only $199 or call 1-800-END-TIME. That's 1-800-363-8463. 1-800-363-8463 or endtime.com.
Did you know that how well your brain works is directly dependent upon how well your gut works? Did you know that an inflamed or compromised digestive system directly contributes to poor focus, depression, irritability, attention deficit, and hyperactivity? By eliminating the inflammation in your intestines and by having good bacteria populations, you may enjoy better brain function. The most important protein your body needs to keep inflammation down is glutathione. The number one food to support a dramatic increase in glutathione production is undamaged whey protein from grass-fed cows. Virtually all whey proteins are damaged by heat, filtration, and chemicals, except one. One World Whey is the most life-giving whey protein on the market. It is changing the lives of its users in very positive ways. One World Whey may act as one of the most important health foods to support your and your child's optimal brain function. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworldwhey.com.
Warning. The unprepared may not survive the next natural disaster, terrorist attack, or economic collapse. In light of recent global unrest and natural disasters, we bring you this urgent message from David Morris, author of the acclaimed Urban Survival Course. Because this message is urgent, we won't waste time on the why you should act now. You already know why. It's the very real and growing dangers reported in the media every day. Now it's the what you must do. Go to freesurvivalminicourse.com and claim your free Urban Survival Mini Course that will prepare you for breakdowns in civil order. Today, David Morris is offering you instant access to his 7-part Urban Survival Mini Course at freesurvivalminicourse.com. You should already be at your keyboard. Enough talk. Act now while you still have time and while it's still free. freesurvivalminicourse.com. freesurvivalminicourse.com or call 877-403-7076. 877-403-7076. You'll be glad you did.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We're back with Gene and Chris and Kevin Randall and Jim Mosley. And let's just get away from all those discussions. I want to cover a couple of more things, Kevin,
before we let you go. Thank you. I keep trying to get away from them as well. Jim keeps dragging us back.
Okay, Jim, no more dragging. No more kicking, dragging, or screaming about Roswell. We're going to.
I had one other question about Waterhorse. Can I?
Last question, then we have to move.
Last question about Waterhorse.
Yes.
In Saucer Smear, I was charitable toward him at that time when I wrote this up. I suppose sometime shortly after he died, and I said, being charitable, I said, I think that basically it's excusable because he did this as a, I can't say favor, but as a good thing, a nice thing for the town of Roswell and for his daughter, who, as you know, is still head of the museum. In other words, he gave the myth a boost that he didn't have to do, but he did do, and I can understand that. Do you think I might be on the right track?
I don't know. I really don't know. He was very adamant that he had not seen anything. His involvement was purely the press release. He also said that he operated as frequently as Colonel Blanchard's aide, a colonel not being authorized an aide. You know, you have to be a general officer to be authorized an aide. But he filled in that position. So he had a relation with Blanchard that was a little bit more intimate than it would have been with Blanchard and some of the other lower-ranking company grade officers. So he may have known more about it than he wanted to let on at the time. So he may have been doing that as a way of helping the town and helping his daughter, or he may have been telling what he knew, that he felt it was necessary to eventually explain everything that had happened, because we should all know what happened. So there's any number of ways that you can go to figure this out.
Okay, I'm finished.
We're going to hear a round of applause from our audience. No more Roswell. Yay, kiddo. All right, back to abductions.
Pretty lame audience there.
Don't say that.
I mean, in the studio.
Well, you know how it goes.
Yeah, we don't have the Howard Stern, cast of thousands.
Or millions, but we'll get there. We're working on it. All right, let's go back to something that's back in the book about abductions. And as you know, prior to the time that Bud Hopkins died, he had to contend with a very disparaging article written by one of his ex-wives, Carol Rainey, regarding the authenticity of some of the research that Bud Hopkins and also Dr. David Jacobs have done. And you have some comments about this in your book. Maybe define them for our listeners.
Not necessarily about abduction. Well, having been on Bud Hopkins' enemies list, I find out, because of my opinion on abductions, There was a certain amount of animosity there, I guess, that I wasn't aware that existed, but apparently did. But what I looked at mainly was, Bud had investigated a UFO crash in Santa Rosa, New Mexico in 1963. And in my book, Crash When UFOs Fall from the Sky, I had mentioned it briefly in the epilogue, that there just didn't seem to be a lot to it, and I didn't know a lot about this case, but it was single witness and not very, very good. In the course of that article that Carol Rainey had written, she mentioned the case in a little bit more detail about it, and I communicated with her about that, and I communicated with Walter Webb about it, because Walter Webb had been involved in the investigation with Bud Hopkins, so I could get an idea of what was going on. And in the article, she suggested that Bud had been more enthusiastic for the case than was warranted, that there really wasn't a whole lot there. And there was a discussion of possibility of lists of witnesses. And Bud wrote a response to that and said, well, there are no other witnesses and things like that. And that Walter Webb's opinion was based on his lack of social skills in his investigation, and I thought that was a little bit untoward, so I did a little bit of research into that. So I but I emailed Carol Rainey, got some information from her, and communicated with Walter Webb, and got a better idea of that investigation. And what it turns out is Bud apparently interviewed this woman named, he called her Beanie, her last name was Bean, and she talked about the crash. So there was a discussion about the reliability of the witnesses, and Bud believed Beanie. She said that there was a police officer that she knew about who was involved in this, and they went and tried to find him, but he'd passed away. And Bud made the comment, well, you don't invent the names of people when you're creating a hoax. And I'm thinking, well, that's not exactly true, because Gerald Anderson used the name of a real person, the inconveniently alive Dr. Buskirk, who said that he wasn't involved. So we looked at all of that stuff, and I mean the conclusion is it's a single witness case. There is no other reliable evidence at all, no other testimony. The corroborative testimony just didn't exist, and the list of names were people who should have been contacted. We lucked out because Walter Hutt had created the yearbook, and we had a list of 80% of the people who were at the base at the time. With this, she said she worked at the hospital, so we knew who the hospital employees were. We knew who the policemen were. The police were involved, so we could find out who the policemen were at the time. But nobody had bothered to follow up on any of those ads, even though Walter Webb had suggested that we do so. So in that respect, you know, I looked at the case, and I just didn't think that it was nearly as exciting as Bud Hopkins had suggested. So I you know, that is outlined in the book, the investigation I conducted, and that was another point of the book. You can do a lot of this investigation now at home through the internet. I mean, this is just such a marvelous tool that even Jim Moseley should get hooked up to the internet.
Well, I tell you, I'm too old and too stubborn and too ignorant, actually.
Well, stubborn would be it, but it's a wonderful research tool because you can. And here's another example, Jim, just for you. On the Rhodes photograph, he mentioned that he'd gotten his PhD in this 90-day wonder program, and this other guy had gotten it the same way. And he Rhodes on the internet had posted a statement about how he'd received his PhD, and he said, unfortunately, this guy is dead. So I'm looking at the internet because it mentioned Kit Peak, and I said, well, let's see if I can verify this guy's name. And it turned out not only could I verify his name, he was still alive, and it gave his email address, and I could email him about it. So I emailed the guy about Rhodes and this story about the PhD. The guy never really answered the questions about it because he was a friend of Rhodes, and I don't think he wanted to make his friend out to be a liar. But the point simply is, you know, we can do all this research now through the internet. We can communicate with people we wouldn't have thought we could communicate. We can find people that, I mean, what were the odds that I could find this guy? With just his name and no idea where he lived or anything about it. It was just this off-the-wall comment about Kitt Peak Observatory, and I followed that link and ended up with an email address for the guy. So, you know,
Could I ask this? You have a PhD, Kevin, and I was at some lecture of yours several years ago where you mentioned to somebody else but in my hearing that it was mail order, but it was better than no PhD at all.
Okay, well, before we discuss the PhDs, we got to discuss this. We have Kevin Randall, Jim Moseley joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats, I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Did you know that gold and silver contain healing properties? It's true. Since the beginning of mankind's history, gold and silver have not only been used as real money, but also for healing our minds and bodies. Utopiasilver.com is your leading source for colloidal silver and colloidal gold, offering supplement protocols that can heal and enhance your health. Protocols for boosting the immune system, insomnia, yeast infections, herpes, and countering the effects of vaccinations and radiation poisoning. And now Utopia Utopiasilver.com encourages the use of real money with this buy one, get one free real money special. For details on your colloidal silver and colloidal gold supplements, call 888-213-4338 and ask about 50% off for first-time customers. That's 888-213-4338 or visit utopiasilver.com. Utopiasilver.com, fighting for liberty and healing one American at a time.
That's what it sounds like when a burglar kicks in the door of a dark house that looks like no one is home. Don't let your home be the next target. Make it look like someone is home watching television with Fake TV. Fake TV is a small electronic device that makes the same light as a real television. So from outside, it looks like someone is home watching TV. Fake TV plugs in just like a lamp on a timer, but is far more convincing to burglars. Fake TV deters burglars, costs far less than an alarm, and is highly recommended by numerous police departments. Use it anytime you're away from home. To order your Fake TV for only $34.95, go to faketv.com. Or call 1-877-5-FAKE-TV. Each additional Fake TV is only $29.95. So get one for you and one for a loved one for safety, security, and peace of mind for both of you. Call 877-5-FAKE-TV or go to faketv.com. FakeTV.com, the burglar deterrent.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5, or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
All right, so the question on the floor, on the table from Jim Mosley.
On the floor.
On the table, under the table, asking Kevin Randall about his doctorate. You're with Gene and Chris in the Paracast. Kevin, what's the response?
What I said was it's distance learning, which is now all the rage. And it's certainly not as prestigious as a PhD from Harvard or Yale.
Now, what's the word that you use?
It's distance learning. And what you do a lot of it over the internet. You communicate with the various professors that way. Many, many traditional bricks and mortar colleges now offer similar degrees in the same vein, and the school is accredited. So, I mean, who cares? The school's accredited.
No, only reason I got interested is just that I happened to overhear you say that. By the way, in the new smear, which if you ask me nicely, I can send to you, the one that's just going to the printer today, actually, I have a review of your book, mostly favorable, I think, and I do mention... I do mention the PhD because I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, go ahead. I'll be quiet for a while.
But as I say, I mean, it's an accredited degree. And in fact, do I?
No, I was going to say, do you wish to receive that issue of Smear?
Yes, I do. Yes.
All right. Well, listen, it's been so long, I think I've lost your address. You may not want to give it over the air, but if you'll...
What I'll do is I'll give you my post office box.
Oh, all right. Then we can send the assassins to the P.O. box.
Yes,
okay,
and then when I show up to pick it up, they can attempt to gun me down at that point.
Okay. We'll exchange addresses, and we'll make sure everybody can contact everybody. All right. In addition to all the discussions we've had, and it's been fun having Jim and Kevin just go back and forth about things in the book, about Roswell and other subjects, there were some questions that our listeners wanted to know about. And I think it'd be a good time that maybe Chris O'Brien can basically delve into the question bank and ask a couple of questions of Kevin Randall. Chris?
Well, we do have quite a number of questions. Of course, I think we've answered some of the Roswell-oriented questions. But here's one from Sentry, who is one of our fairly long-term, long-time posters. And he asks, in a recent issue of Saucer Smear, Jim Moseley had been revisiting the Cash Landrum UFO case from 1980. And Sentry would like to hear Kevin's opinion on this case, especially his thoughts on the military helicopters believed to be involved. If this was a military operation, could it be uncovered after all these years?
I haven't done a lot of research into Cash Landrum. I find it interesting. But as a former Army helicopter pilot, I wonder where they got all the damned helicopters at that time of the year. And yes, if it was a military operation and that number of helicopters was involved, there's got to be a large support contingent. You've got to have full fuel. You've got to have quarters for the flight crews. You've got to provide food for them. So there should be a lot of documentation if there was this huge contingent of military helicopters. Clearly the Cash and Landrums were exposed to radiation, and clearly they were sickened by it. So I think John Schussler did the definitive work on that thing. So if, questions about that, they should look for John Schussler's work on Cash Landrum. But it's a very interesting case, and certainly one where the craft seemingly interacted with the environment by making the three people who were closest to it ill.
You know, I've been in touch with Schussler lately to some degree and with other people. Schussler and probably most of these other people would basically prefer that it be interplanetary rather than something of ours. Let's say interplanetary just as a substitute for whatever weirdness may actually be the cause of saucers. The point is, in this particular case, I think it's very probable that it was some horrible experiment of ours that went wrong.
And you may be absolutely correct.
All right, thank you.
I don't know what experiment it would be. And I know that I know John and a lot of the people tilt toward the extraterrestrial explanation in this case. But as I say, clearly there is evidence that the event took place, whatever the event may have been. And
I have ascertained that we know what the helicopter group was, and I forget, I don't have it all in front of me, but it was a group that was assembled specifically to eventually try to rescue the hostages, and that was its purpose, and eventually they weren't needed because it was done through a political means. But that was their special mission, and they were training vigorously, and they very well could have been and seem to have been doing their maneuvers and their training during Christmas week, which is a time that you wouldn't expect helicopters. So Smear, in its investigation, I think, nailed that down. I don't know if anybody previously had done so. What we haven't nailed down and never will is what was the craft, and I don't know.
Maybe we'll have more coverage of Cash Landrum on a future episode of the PowerCast. Chris, let's move to the next question.
This is a whole series of questions from Blowfish, who's, again, another one of our fairly long-time posters. I'm going to skip the Roswell case.
Please.
Thank you.
What are your most top five credible UFO cases which have more than one eyewitness? That's kind of a tall order to answer that one. And then for what it's worth, what's your favorite and least favorite sci-fi movies?
Oh, God.
Yeah, Kevin can answer that. Go ahead.
The science fiction movies, my goodness, there's so many really good ones. And most of the ones I really like are the old ones from the 50s, like the Deadly Mantis, especially when they did it on Mystery Science Theater 3000. Forbidden Planet's always been really, really good. And I enjoyed Earth versus the Flying Saucers, of course. And there's so many really crappy science fiction movies as well. Galaxy of Terror, I think, might be among the very worst. Plan 9 from Outer Space was fun because it's so bad. Okay, so we take care of the science
fiction. That's good.
Top five multiple witness. Oh, well, if we ignore Roswell, because we don't want to mention that name again, I'm thinking of Leveland, because you've got witnesses at least 13 separate locations, eyewitnesses and multiple witnesses at some of those locations, so there's more than 13 witnesses. You've got the craft interacting with the environment, which is stalling the engines. You've got the obvious Air Force attempts to belittle the case. The investigator shows up for most of it and talks to three witnesses, and the Air Force says, well, there were only three witnesses, but if anybody had bothered to look, you would have found more. So that's a very interesting case. Lubbock, because it's very close to Leveland, we'll just mention that, but because of the photographs taken by Carl Hart Jr. as opposed to anything else, I talked to Carl Hart Jr. a number of years ago, and he said at that time he didn't know what he photographed. He wasn't sure they were alien spacecraft, but he didn't know what he'd photographed. So there's an interesting case where you've got a lot of people involved. Some of them are seeing natural phenomenon. Ruppelt, in his book, said that he knew the explanation, but when we finally got a hold of Ruppelt's papers and found out he was talking about it being fireflies, and I don't remember fireflies flying in a formation. Let's see. I'm trying to think of multiple witness cases here. The Washington Nationals, because you've got multiple witnesses, you've got people on the ground, you've got people, airline pilots, you've got military pilots, you've got the craft seen on radar crafts, you've got radar scopes, so you've got instrumentality. The Charles Moore sighting from New Mexico in 1949.
We have three cases so far. We'll ask for the other two on the other side. Next week on the PowerCast, we'll have a special all-star episode where we will honor Lucius Farish, whom some regard as the rock of ufology, next week on the PowerCast. We have Kevin Randall and Jim Mosley. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the PowerCast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO@webtv.net. That's MrUFO@webtv.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Folks, have you lost your power and wanted to simply flip a switch to get the lights back on? If so, this is going to be the most important message you'll ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get ready for the winter power outages ahead. Here's why. Solar power generators are now available from our friends at Solutions from Science, one of our oldest sponsors. Their emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like having an electric power plant running quietly in your own home. Whether it's ice storms, brownouts, or blackouts, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. When the power goes out this winter, you'll be ready with a solar power generator from Solutions from Science. Go to MySolarBackup.com for more information. That's MySolarBackup.com or call 877-327-0365.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
In this final segment of the PowerCast with Kevin Randall, Jim Moseley, Gene Steinberg, Chris O'Brien, we've been asking, where we have time, your questions, listeners, the ones you've posted at the forums, forum.thepowercast.com, in a place called the Question Bank. And Kevin Randall was asked about his five favorite multiple witness cases, three so far, two to go. Kevin?
Well, we've got Leveland, we've got Lubbock, we've got the Washington Nationals, we've got Charles Moore.
Okay, that's four.
Ray, New Mexico, and let's see. Bentwaters is always very interesting, especially because we have some very good testimony from the military witnesses if we ignore Larry Warren. So there's five very good cases.
Chris, what's the next question?
This is from our administrator and moderator, resident skeptic, Angelo. Question for Kevin Randall. Have you ever come across any cattle mutilations that are actually paranormal?
Personally, no. The ones that I've investigated, we've always been able to find a terrestrial explanation for. My favorite, and I only mention this because the guy's name was Jefferson Davis, veterinarian living in Wisconsin, Jeff Davis in Wisconsin, because they were talking about a cattle mutilation, and he was the vet, and I went and talked to him about it, and he said it was clear that the farmer had committed the mutilation for the insurance money. If the cow, which had been sickly its whole life, if it had died of natural causes, he got no insurance, but if he had been killed by the mutilators, whomever they were, then he would have gotten his insurance money. And that answer is, for that case specifically, it's not a suggestion that spans all cattle mutilations. It's that case specifically was thought. But I haven't seen any of it in my investigations that involved the paranormal.
Chris, so why don't you go with the next question?
Well, again, most of the, you know, I think we've asked all our non-Roswell questions, but we do have a couple of interesting ones that dovetail away from Roswell. Do you feel that there is a demonstrable link between Roswell and the rapid advance of technology starting in the 50s? And what specific modern tech do you know of, if any, that is rumored or thought to be linked directly back to Roswell and alien craft? So this is kind of getting into the Corso realm of back engineering and salting private industry with technological information for them to back engineer. What the subject of back engineering, and what do you think about all that?
If Roswell was extraterrestrial, there would be an attempt to reverse engineer it. No question about it. The technological leaps that we seem to have made in the 50s seem to be driven by human research. I mean, you can find the you can see the evolution through the scientific papers and the scientific research being done. I think Corso mentioned specifically transistors, but you can see that the transistor was actually under development prior to 1947, so there doesn't seem to be anything there that suggests that. If I was to guess, it seems, and it's just what it seems to me, is the use of composite materials for the skin of various aircraft would be my guess, but I have nothing to back that up, and it's just kind of a guess on my point. I would point out that the XR-71, which was they began development in the 50s, and that technology is stunning for 1950 when you think this is 1950s technology, but I see no relation between the development of the SR-71 and anything that might have been picked up at Roswell. So I make that point clear, just that some of the technological developments we were making in the 50s and 60s was just absolutely stunning, and I don't think it has any relation to UFOs.
You know, the one thing I could say, just really silly devil's advocate question about this, and that is that we look at the histories of the development of transistors and other things, and we say, well, they couldn't have been reverse engineered from Roswell. There are two other possibilities, one which is that things we learned from Roswell jump-started existing research, and number two, we kind of altered the records so we'd show a clear delineation of discoveries in the notes, but that's not quite what happened. Is that silly?
The problem with that is you've got to go back and you've got to eliminate a lot of stuff. I mean, let's just take as an example Robert B. Willingham, who claimed to have seen this UFO crash near Del Rio, Texas. He claims that his records have been expunged. They've gotten rid of them. Well, you can't do that because there's all kinds of stuff. There's something called the Air Force Officers Registry. Had he been an Air Force officer, his name should appear in that document. And it was printed every year for literally decades. In fact, if you go to the Army Registry, you can and you look up 1877, it tells you you get a list of the names of the officers killed at the Little Bighorn, for example. So I mean, it's a complete registry of the officers in the military.
There's always going to be a copy, long and short of it. There's always going to be a copy of some sort of document that exists outside the official channels.
Yeah, there's no way to get everything. There's no way to eliminate everything. You can always find the trail that way. And so when you say, when somebody says, well, you know, they've altered the records and that, well, you can't do that. And it's like they say there was a picture. Somebody said there was a picture of the crashed craft on the front page of the newspaper, and it came to our, you know, it came one evening and we hid it, but then the military came around and were picking up all the copies. Well, you hid your copy, didn't you? Well, yes, we did. Well, where is it? Well, we've lost it.
That's the point. The point being that no matter what you do, whatever we did to hide Bob Lazar's real educational record, some copy would exist somewhere.
And with Willingham, he can't produce any documents. If you ask me, if I say to you, well, I retired as a lieutenant colonel from the Army, and you say, well, we wrote to St. Louis, and your records don't reflect that. Can you prove it? I've even got copies of travel vouchers, for God's sakes. So you know, I've got piles of documents to prove it. But these guys say, well, I lost all my documents. They were lost in the fire. My wife threw them out. You know, all of that stuff. It just doesn't make any sense. So when you
got to watch about the wives throwing out all the old critical records that you need to prove your case.
Yes, yes, and, right. and that's it. There's always if you dig a little bit, you can find the records. The government just isn't that good to eliminate all that information unless they happen to be there and can turn off the spigot at the very source before you get a chance to create a lot of the documentation.
And even then, they can always create bogus documentation to confuse everybody.
And if they're not doing it, then there's enough people in the UFO field doing it to help them out. I won't even mention MJ-12 in that context.
Oh, do. Please do.
But you only have a minute, so basically you don't believe MJ-12 is all a fake. That it?
Yes. Yes. That's absolutely correct. And I really don't think the government had a hand in it. I think that was misinformation created by specific people in the UFO field, and I'll be very careful and explain. I don't think Stan Friedman had a hand in it, but there were others who created the MJ-12 documents for their own reasons, and it had
Bill Moore, perhaps.
I'm not going to mention any names, Bill Moore, Jim Chandler, and Richard Doty. I won't mention any names.
No names. I'll tell you what, before we run out of time to mention names, Kevin Randall, you have this book, Reflections of a UFO Investigator from Anomalous Books. Tell our listeners where they can find more of your stuff in addition to this book.
You can find it all at Amazon.com, and you can get a Kindle version of it. And Kindle is really neat because I just got my iPad, so I've been getting Kindle books, and that's kind of fun. You can take a look at my blog, which is at kevinrandall.blogspot.com, or just type a different perspective into your search engine, and it should pop up. And you can find some of the stuff. You can find more stuff about UFOs there, and we'll just... go to Barnes & Noble, you can find the books. Go to any of your bookstores, any of the online places, you can find a lot of the stuff.
Jim Ousley, how do we get a copy of Saucer Smear?
Well, I don't know if Kevin will ever get one because you wouldn't let him give his address. But for other people, they can write to my name, Jim Ousley, P.O. Box 1709, Key West, Florida, 33041.
And you can find our old friend Chris O'Brien's stuff at OurStrangePlanet.com. He hangs out the Paracast forums at forum.theparacast.com. This is the kind of show I love because we have such great guests, I can just sit back and enjoy it. Kevin Randall, Jim Ousley, thanks for joining us this week on the Paracast.
Oh, thank you.
Jim?
Yes, thank you. Oh, yes.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.